We're going to start with Parshas Shemini. It's Yud Aleph Chav Tes. We're going to talk about the Shmona Shratzim, the eight different Shratzim. There's three different parts of this year. The first part is going to be more trying to figure out what these Shratzim are, the definition of what these things are. The second thing is going to go through a certain measures, and the third is going through the Gemara that brings down the Shmona Shratzim. So we're going to go through all three of them. We're not really going to get into so much Tuma as it is just try to figure out what they are. So here's the Pasuk. Pasuk Chav Tes, Zelecham Atomei Basheretz HaShoretz HaOretz. These are the ones that are Tomei in the Shratzim that crawl upon the ground. Hacholed va'achbor va'tzav limineu. These are the three. We got choled, achbor, and tzav. And then we have in pasuk lamed v'hanaka v'hakoach v'haltoa v'achomet v'atinshamas. So the definition of all these alludes article. Article just translated is just the literal translation in the English and goes through hacholed achbor. But we have to figure this out. Now, a sheretz is defined as an animal that walks on short legs. That could be a mammal, an insect, a reptile, or an amphibian. It could be any of these, meaning it doesn't have to be. The only thing that it's not, that it can't be, is it can't be a bird, and it can't be what we would call a fish. Neither one of those can be considered shrutzim. There are shrutzim in the sea, but that's not a reference to what we're talking about. When we talk about the Shmona Shrutzim, we are only referring to these creatures that are either reptile, amphibian, insect, or mammal. That can include so many different animals, because if we look at it, here's the problem. There are over 2,000 different species of rodents that exist in the animal world. If we have Shmona Shrutzim, we're just going to say achbor, just mouse. What does that include? Does that include anything? And the deal is that if any of these shrutzim die and you touch them, then you become tame. Well, is that true by absolutely everything? What does that apply to? And this is a major issue because you can't just go around and say, well, that guy's tame and that guy's not tame. How do you know what's the definition of all these things? If we talk about bats, just bats, if tinshames is referring to a bat, which it probably isn't, it seems that a tinshames is referring to something else. But if it is, there's over 1,100 different species of bats. I'll bet you know three, like the vampire bat, the fruit bat, and like a brown bat. That's it, right? There's 1,100 of them altogether. If you go into insects, there are 30 million different species of insects. If they include all the insects that are out there, that doesn't even include spiders, arachnids, anything like that. That's a crazy amount. So the Gemara in Shabbos also adds on that aside from these being creatures with shorter legs and the ability to crawl, etc., also they have usable hides. Hides, meaning their skin is able to be used for something. We don't know what, but it could be used for something. That's going to be a big important thing as well. What do you use all these hides for? It's going to help us define what these creatures are. Nonetheless, what are these creatures? The Ibn Ezra says we have no idea. There's no idea. There's no way to figure out what these eight are. If you try to figure out the Shmona Shratzim, you're going to be wrong. There's nothing you can do to try to figure it out. Similar to the birds, we have to use our Misora that we have from the Rabbanim to tell us what they are and what makes us tummy. Now, it's different. By the birds, that means that anything that's mentioned in the Torah is not kosher. So if you don't know what the birds are, that makes most of the birds not kosher. You need a Masorah to kasher the birds. Here it's going to be a little bit different. In order to become Tameh, you need a Masorah to tell us this is that animal, this is the one they're referring to that makes it Tameh. So it's difficult to be able to figure out. So seemingly, we're just going to be Machmer over here. Now the best safer for this by far, if you have it, you need to go through it. Our school has done an absolute tremendous job at translating everything, except for definitions of animals. For this, you need Rav Aryeh Kaplan's Living Torah. If you have the Living Torah, it's a big purple book that looks like you're not from if you own it. It is the greatest sefer in the world. It's one that nobody knows. Because you look at the Miyam Lois was translated, well, at least the first two, Brachos and Shmos, were translated by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. But the Living Torah is an amazing sefer that totally goes overlooked because it looks like it was written by, again, some Reform rabbi in 1963. That's the problem. But it's an unbelievable sefer. In here, we're going to quote a lot of things from there, but there's a lot of things from other Sfarim as well, so we'll go. Choled. Rashi calls this a mustela. A mustela is probably an old French for mustelid. Mustelid is a Latin name, the category of creatures that includes weasels. There are least weasels in Eretz Yisrael. On the right-hand side of your sheet, that is a picture of a least weasel right over there with a brown body and a white underside. There's no question that they would be included in that category. We all know choled from the word chulda. chulda, which appears in Pesachim, right? The chulda that comes in and eats the embryos as soon as they come inside the pits and everything like that, that is a weasel. That's a reference to the weasel. That's referred to it. Targum Yonasan seems to say the same. Targum Yonasan calls it a karkushta. Karkushta seems to be the Aramaic word used for weasel, even though the Musaf La'aruch says that it refers to a field mouse. A field mouse is the mouse right down below, right over there, on the left-hand side. There are martens as well. A marten is also a type of mustelid. That also would be included. The reason why mustelids are interesting, well, nothing makes animals interesting except everything. So the reason why mustelids are interesting is because every single one of them give off something like a skunk, a musk that comes from them, either when they want to get rid of you or when they're excited. There's like a musk, a smell that comes from them. You'll find that by weasels, you'll find that by badgers, you'll find it by skunks, obviously, but they're all in the same basic category that puts them together in that way. Martens as well, there's a tiny little bit of a smell that comes through. The Tosis Yom Tov and Pesachim. First Perek Mishnah Beis says this is a rat. The Chulda is really a rat, not a weasel. It's not a reference to weasel. The Aruch says it's a type of mole of some sort. On the side, you have a mole rat that's on the right-hand side. I don't want to make a picture of a rat. If you don't know what a rat looks like, you're awesome. You've never been to Mea Sharm. And Bava Kama Daf Pei and Bava Vasser Yud Tesim Abeis, it says that the Chulda bores holes in the ground beneath houses, which could be a rat. It's possible, but it definitely doesn't sound like a weasel. It sounds more like a mole. So either way, these three creatures, weasel, rat, and mole, would all be included in this category of what we call chulda. Next one is the easy one, the achbar. Everybody knows what an achbar is. An achbar is a mouse. Rashi says that he doesn't say anything at all, which seems to indicate that everybody knows what this is and you don't have to worry about anything. Targum Yonasan says it includes white, red, and black mice. I would assume it includes all colors, and it shouldn't make that much of a difference. Miam Loei says it includes rats. Not only regular mice, but also rats itself. I tried figuring out, does anybody know Hebrew really well? Does anybody know how to say rat in Hebrew? I got 7 different translations from online, and I'm not positive. Somebody told me it was chulda. Somebody told me it was achbarush, or something like that. Achbarish. Nobody here knows Hebrew. Yeah, why would we all know Hebrew? We all went to school here. All right, fine. That's a problem. Number 3, tsav. A tsav, says Rashi, is a froit. A froit is a French word which refers to toad. He says also in the Rashi itself, he says it's similar to a frog. That makes the most sense that we're referring to a toad itself. It is not a frog, though. There is a major difference between frogs and toads, but this is not the time or place for that. The European green toad is the most common toad in all of Eretz Yisrael. It's on the right-hand side. It's got the green coloring with the little spots on it. That's by far the most common. The Targum Yonasan calls it a chadrona, which is a type of lizard. Some type of lizard is out there. Miam Loei says it's a tortoise. Probably that's where we get the word tsav, as in a turtle nowadays. But a tortoise is a little bit different from a turtle. It's a little bit bigger and a little bit big. The Septuagint, you know what the Septuagint is, right? Septuagint is the translated Torah from the 72 Rabbanim that were separated by Ptolemy. When we darkened the world by translating the Torah, this is what it refers to. It refers to the Septuagint. It's the King James Bible, so to speak, but what that's based off of. Septuagint calls it a land crocodile. A land crocodile could refer to a toad, could refer to a turtle. I don't know what that means. There is, whatever. But it could also be a dab lizard or a thorn-tail lizard, which is the left-hand side, one of those that I guess would be kept as pets itself. Now, all of those are referring to some type of a green toad or a tortoise or a lizard. That's what tsav is. The Radak, the Ralbag, and the Chizkuni all say it refers to a ferret or another type of mammal, which makes sense. If the first two are referring to mammals, meaning you have the chulda and the achbar, then you'd think that the tsav would also be a mammal, that it's also referring to a mammal. Now, it could be a Eurasian badger. Eurasian badgers are awesome. I don't want to suggest that anybody ever looks up anything online, but if you do and you have safe browsers and you can look it up, go look up what honey badgers and Eurasian badgers do. They're the coolest creatures of all time. If you know what I'm talking about, you're evil for having the internet, but regardless, they're absolutely unbelievable. And it could also be a Eurasian otter. If you want to see a Eurasian otter, they do have them in Brookfield Zoo in one of their things, but they have it right over there. Art Scroll translation says it means, Rashi says, it says ferret. But it's coming from the word freut. The word freut, I think, is just a mistake by Art Scroll. I think he understood freut to be ferret, but it sounds the same. They're totally different. Freut in French is a reference to a toad. I looked up in our French dictionary. Pretty good, right? Who looks up French dictionaries except for me? But that's that. The Ralbag says something extremely strange here. He calls this animal an Orion. He says it's something that gets angry until it bursts, and the smell that comes from it, when it does so, kills anyone that comes near it. Tsav is from the word latzbos beten velan pil yorech. Anybody remember where that's from? Latzbos beten velan pil yorech? By the sota woman. That's the bursting of the stomach. That's where the word self comes from, and it blows up when somebody comes near. The reason why the word limineu is here is because it includes all these different types of creatures. Everything's included. So this would be, again, if we have this correctly, we've got European toad, tortoise, and lizard, and it also includes some type of, I guess you could say, Eurasian otter and badger. That's what we refer to over here. Regardless, that's what it is. Anaka, Rashi says, it's a heritzon. What's a heritzon? Probably a porcupine. The way he describes it in Baba Basra, it is an animal with skin, or the hairs are as hard as needles, which definitely could call it that. Uncleus calls it a yala, which really could be a hedgehog. Really could refer to a hedgehog itself. They're similar to porcupine. There still are porcupines throughout Israel. I saw one myself in Neve Yaakov. It scared the living daylights out of me, because when you're not expecting it, porcupines are really scary creatures. But all of a sudden it came out of nowhere and just climbed up right in front of me. But they are around Eretz Yisrael. Hedgehogs are there as well. The Radak, the Ralbag, and the Chizkuni seem to say this. The Radak says it's a beaver. There are no beavers in Eretz Yisrael that we know of, but there might have been back in the day. Septuagint says it's a type of mole. But all of these are referring to some type of porcupine, some type of hedgehog, something like that. Now, stop for a second, okay? Let's time out for a second. Do you remember what I said about Shrutzen? That one of the indicating factors that tells you it's a Sheretz is that its skin is usable. Now, hold on. Does anybody use a mouse skin for anything? Has that ever been used? I mean, isn't that strange? Maybe you could say a weasel has been used because they make mink coats. Weasel coats are also very, very soft fur. So maybe you could take a bunch of weasels and like do something with them. Maybe that's possible. If you're going to say rat or mice from Achbor, unless you have a huge mouse that's really, really cute, I don't know anybody that's wearing that type of fur coat. But yeah, what were you going to say? I'm sorry? Yeah, but the skin, meaning the skin is usable. In theory, you could still use the skin of a mouse even though it's disgusting. So maybe it's referring to a mouse. But it's not referring to usable in science. It's referring to usable in the sense that it's usable as the skin itself. So maybe that's what it's referring to. The tsav being a badger or an otter makes sense because those skins are actually used. To be a turtle, you could say maybe. I don't know anybody that uses the skin, but they definitely use the shells. Frogs or toads, in theory, you could use the skin for something, I guess, that might be considered, and a lizard as well. But it is interesting. The anaka, the porcupine that we're calling a porcupine or a hedgehog, I don't know what they used to use the skin for. There is a Gemara. Everybody knows this Gemara because you've all done Baba Basra at some point in your life, right? So Gimel Mabez Dalam and Aleph talks about where Hordus took over the kingdom, right, and eventually blinded Bava Ben Buta by making him a crown of porcupine quills. So it seems they did use it, but I don't know if they used the skin or just that itself. Maybe that's good enough. Either way, this anaka, Rav Sadia Gaon says, is a type of gecko, which is all over the world, and he says that the word anaka is the sound that it makes. It makes the word anaka. I've had geckos in the house before. My son can testify to that. They do not make that sound, or at least mine don't. Maybe there are other geckos that make that sound, but not the ones that we have. Art Scroll quotes Radak. And again, I'm not arguing with Art Scroll. Art Scroll is amazing. Tell me to come in that spend a lot of time doing this. But Art Scroll quotes Radak that it's a viper. There's no way it's a viper because snakes are not in this list for a very good reason. A viper is a type of snake. So I think, again, Art Scroll had a mistake that they put in over here that was put through, but I don't understand what he saw. It can't be a viper. There's no way it's referring to a viper. There's no way a Rishon could say that. Yeah. What's up? The Radak is probably, I quoted up above, it's referring to a hedgehog. So I'm not so sure what's referring. I looked up the Radak. The Radak didn't say anything more than just hedgehog, but maybe I messed up something. I just don't think that it could be possible that he's saying a viper. The Koach, number 5, Rashi doesn't say anything by the Koach, but the Ralbag says it's a lizard, possibly a poisonous one. The Septuagint says it's a Mediterranean chameleon or some other type of chameleon. If you've been around Har Nof, there are chameleons in the trees. You can find them. You can keep them. It's evil, but you can go ahead and keep them, and they eat all the flies inside your house. They're amazing at doing that inside your house. Radak and Rav Sadia Gaon says it's a desert monitor. But you never knew that these things existed. They're 4 feet long, these big lizards, and they're all around the desert areas near Tel Aviv. If you go check them out right over there, don't get killed by it. It would be very, very silly to do so. But they are huge lizards that live in Eretz Yisrael. That refers to a desert monitor. How tall? I'm sorry? Yeah, like relative, but monitors are all related to Komodo dragons, right? But they're not in the same category of lizards. They're in totally different categories. The monitors technically have a poison in their teeth, I believe, while the Komodo dragons only have this type of like bacteria that sticks in their teeth. I think recently the scientists have come out that even Komodo dragons have a poison together with the bacteria in their teeth, but I don't listen to science. Salta, I'm joking, I do somewhat. The Rashi says it's referring to a lavistero, which refers, sounds like sort of like a lizard, and all the Rishonim seem to say the same. Targum Yonah says shmamis. A shmamis is a spider. And again, if we're dealing with skins or something that, I don't know, if I'm describing a short-legged creature, I'm not describing a spider. Spiders all have legs that are longer than their bodies. So to me, I don't think I understand exactly what that means. But that's normally what you translate a shmamis as. It could be that, again, it's referring to a lizard. In the Gemara, it says that the lizard's tail moves after it's cut off from the body. The halta's tail, that seemingly refers to a lizard. That could be any lizard, any gecko that's out there. But that's number six. Number seven, chomet. Rashi says it's limtza. In Chagiga Yud Aleph, he says it's an animal which grows inside a shell, and the shell grows with it as it grows. So you all know what that is. That's a snail. That's going to be a snail. Again, no one uses snail skin, but you would use the snail shell for something, and maybe that's going to be good enough. It's possible that's going to be good enough over here. Yeah.
You know, like Rashi or something says like that this is this animal. Do we really hold for sure 100% that
animal? No, we have a Misora. So the Misora of Rashi is that it's referring to this, right? But the Misora of others was going something else. The Rishonim clearly felt that there were different ways of looking at different things, and therefore they might have been machmir. It's not necessarily that they were arguing. It could be that it's both. Like when Rav Sadia Gaon over here says it's a skink. Rashi came after Rav Sadia Gaon. He says it's a skink. It's a small little lizard. You see it on the right-hand side of the page over here. It doesn't necessarily mean that Rashi's arguing. He's saying we also have to be choshesh that it might be a snail. So touching a snail after it dies would mean you're going to become tame. That's interesting, by the way. Touching a snail after it dies. I have snails all in one of my fish tank. My fish tank in Skokie Yeshiva. Does it refer to every snail? Does it refer to a land snail? What if I pick up a snail afterward? Does that make me tame? It's going to be interesting to be able to figure it out. And the last one, number eight, is the tinshemes. Rashi calls it talfa, which is translated as a mole. We had the mole up above. This is how Rashi says it's referring to a mole. The Targum Unkelus says the same. Chizkuni, Ralbag, Radak all say that. Now, it could be there are two of them. Because one is by the birds. At the end of the birds, it says the word tinshemes, and over here it says the word tinshemes. Rashi in Chulin Samach Gimel says one is considered a bird, a bat, and I know bats are mammals, but it's totally different. The Torah does not have the categories that we have in science, meaning a whale, even though we know that's a mammal, and a dolphin, is a dug by the line of the Torah. Because anything that is in the water and lives in the water and stays in the water, does everything in the water, even if it breathes air or has hair on its body, is still considered a fish. So a whale is a fish, a dolphin is a fish, and a porpoise is a fish. A sea lion is probably a fish as well, a dug, since it runs to the water when it's trying to get away from something. All of those things would be considered of the sea as opposed to on the land itself. In fact, I heard from different people that the achbar of the yam, that the mouse of the sea is a reference to the sea lion. It's possible. It's definitely possible that's what it refers to. So one is considered a bat. That is a bird that is not kosher, all those 1,100 species of bats. And this is referring to a sheretz, an animal. That animal, or mammal, I should say, would be referring to a mole, the mole that lives underground. Torah Tamima says, a really weird thing, it's an animal that makes a loud sound at night. The Gemara says it is a paos shebishrotzim. The word paos sounds like it's making noises at night. Torah Shlema says it's not pahos, it's a mistake, not pei ayin vav saf, but rather baos, and he calls it the most ugliest of the creatures of the ground. And if you've ever seen a mole's face, they do look pretty ugly. Not terribly ugly, because some of them are pretty cute. But if you ever see a star-nosed mole, you can make a bracha of Mishana Habrios when you see a star-nosed mole for the very first time. It is a really ugly creature. It looks like it has 12 worms coming out of its nose. You see something like that, I'm perfectly fine with making a bracha of Mishana Habrios on. Right, that's that. Targum Yonasan calls this a salamandra. And that's something that's going to get us over there. A salamandra. What's a salamandra? Salamander. Now, there are salamanders in Eretz Yisrael. You look on the side, there's one salamander over there, right? But it seems that the Gemara fantastically describes this animal as something that's formed from fire. So let's go into this for a little bit. What exactly is that salamander? So there's a very strange Gemara in Chulin Kuf Chav Zayin that says that the Tzav includes many other creatures that are like it. Remember, the Tzav was either a lizard or some type of badger, otter type of thing. It's one of those two. So it says over there that other creatures are included when we said Tzav. Okay? And it includes An arvad, that's the difference. There is an arod that Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa fought. Remember, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa heard that there was an arod, a big, huge, poisonous snake that was killing people in a certain city. So what did he do? There's a Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Gimel, I believe. So he went ahead and he found the hole of the snake and he put his foot right on the hole. So when the snake came up, the snake bit Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa and then the snake died. It's like a Chuck Norris joke and it's the best joke ever, right? A poisonous snake once again, after 3 days of painful agony, the snake died. That's what happened to Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa's snake. The Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa was fine and the snake died afterward. It was an amazing Yerushalmi that's quoted by Rav Nissim going on that daf. But regardless, that's Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. That's in our road, a huge poisonous snake. There is also in our vad. And our vad is a creature, we have no idea what it is, but it is combination of a tzav and a nachash, a snake and this tzav, or whatever it is. We do not know what this creature is. I have absolutely no idea. But it's included that this animal would be tameh if it died, whatever this arvad is. There's also the ben nephilim or b'nei nephilim. Again, we don't know what those are. And the salamandra. Rabbi Akiva would read this pasuk. And he'd read this pasuk and say, Ma rabu ma'asech Hashem, how wondrous are your works, O HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have creatures that can only live in the sea and can't live on land. You have creatures that can only live on land and can't be in the sea. And then he says, you have creatures that can only live in the sky, and you have creatures that can only live in fire. And the reference that he's talking about when he says that is a reference to the salamander that only lives in fire. Now, what does that mean over here? So there are four different explanations as to where a salamander comes from. Let's see where this is. Rashi there in Chulin says that if somebody takes atze hadas, this is myrtle wood that is going ahead, myrtle wood that is being burned in a fire together with magics, he says. You take magic and you start burning it in a fire itself, rubbing its blood onto your body makes you impervious to fire. So how does it form? Again, you have magic, atzei hadasim, right, wood from hadasim themselves, and you go ahead and you put that together, that ends up making this salamander. It comes from the fire. And if you take that blood of that salamander, you will now be impervious to fire for the rest of your life. It's like asbestos, and you'll be fine. You never have to worry about anything for the rest of your life. You'll be able to go into fire. In Sanhedrin Samach Gimel Amud Beis, earlier, in Samach Gimel Amud Beis, it says that Chizkiyahu's mother used this salamander, used that blood, to put on Chizkiyah. Chizkiyah's father, Ahaz, was an extremely evil individual. Need this. No problem. All good. But Ahaz was an extremely evil individual. He wanted his son to die, put him through Molech, or some version of Molech. Everybody knows what Molech is? The Avodah Zarah, in which you get thrown through a fire. There's like a line of fire on both sides, and you have to pass the kid through, or like a big idol that was holding all these things. So he put him through. He put him all the way through the fire itself, and Chizkiyahu survived. One of the very few kids, and he couldn't figure out how. How did he do it? Because Chizkiyahu's mother took salamander blood, rubbed it all over him, says the Gemara, and therefore he was impervious to fire. It's cool, right? I have no idea if he became a fireman later on when he came out in life. Can you imagine? That would be like the greatest job ever for Chizkiyah. But he was a melech and a tremendous tzaddik who ended up having it. That's over there. So we got our first Gemara. That's the first Gemara that's in Chulin Kuf Chav Zayin, what Rashi says over there. In Chagiga Chav Zayin, Rashi and the Rabbeinu Bechaya in this Parsha say the following. He says, if the salamander will be born, if you burn a fire in the same area for 7 years straight. It's pretty awesome if you end up burning a fire for 7 years straight. But if you have a fire for 7 years straight, a salamander will come through it. The first one was through magic. This one is not through magic. This is just push it. You make a fire for 7 years, this salamander is going to come through it. That's what Rashi says. Seems like a steer on Rashi. We'll go through that in a second. The Aruch adds something even stranger. When you burn this fire for 7 years, a creature comes out and it looks like a mouse. It doesn't look like a salamander. It looks like a mouse. Now, granted, looking at a salamander, I can understand that people would think that a salamander looks like a mouse without any fur on. I definitely can hear that. It looks like a hairless mouse. I guess I can get it. So that might not be such a stira, but it does seem that's the reason why he says that the salamander is really the achbar. There is no mouse in these psukim. It's referring to the salamander, and that's it. And the Medrash Tanhuma says, not 7 years. 7 days and seven nights. You burn a fire for 7 days and seven nights in a kiln where you make glass, where you blow glass. Then, from that fire, from 7 days and seven nights, you will have a salamander that ends up coming through over here. Pretty crazy, right? You have these four Gemaras. Four, I should say, two Rashis. Then you end up having the Aruch and the Medrash Tanhuma. Just to be clear, these Rishonim are not saying that if you have a fire for 7 days or 7 years, it will be automatic that a salamander comes from it. That's not what they're saying. They're not saying that every fire will have a salamander. They're saying that in order to have a salamander, there would need to be a fire of 7 years or a fire of 7 days. So suffice it to say, no, we have not yet found any salamanders that have been born from fire. I mean, I haven't. Anybody here? Nobody, right? I have not made one, but there are fires out there. Well, yeah, hold on. In most shoals, we have a fire right there that's in the oven that is a pilot light that is on constantly and never goes out. So if there are salamanders coming from that oven, first of all, that's awesome. Absolutely awesome. But you're right. Maybe it needs a higher flame, right? Maybe it needs a higher flame. But even that, guys, there are definitely places in the world where there are fires for 7 days and seven nights, and possibly even for 7 years. Now, again, it doesn't mean that every fire has to have a salamander, but we've never seen it before, which means it's hard for us to understand. Hard for us to understand. Ask any scientist, they're going to tell you it is impossible. There is no way that you can end up having a salamander coming from all this. That's what they're going to tell you over here. So now we have an issue. What does that mean for us? So the Chasam Sofer is the closest thing that we can have as a huge, huge Talmud Chacham who's also a bit of a scientist. Did you know that the Chasam Sofer technically wrote his own encyclopedia? You know that? He had his own little thing. The Chasam Sofer was a genius beyond geniuses. Genius beyond geniuses. With all this farm and everything that he wrote, the Chasam Sofer had his own ideas of what he wanted to do with how he wanted to educate all the Jews of everything that he was just mad, absolutely mad brilliant. The Chasam Sofer says in Chulin, he tries putting these two Rashis together by saying all salamanders are born in volcanic areas. In areas. He calls them mountains of fire. And to me, I don't know, I would assume mountains of fire refers to volcano. That makes sense, right? So he said they're all found in those areas. That's where they're coming from. They can be brought to you using magic. In order to get a salamander near you, you'd have to use magic. But they have to live in fire. So in order to bring the salamander to you through your magic, you need to have a fire that's burning for 7 days or 7 years. That's what you need to have. So it's not that the fire bears the salamander. It's that since they're around these areas, therefore, in order to get them, they have to bring them to you. Now, no known salamanders live in absolute volcanic areas, but it's very difficult to be able to search those areas. Don't tell me it's impossible. There's an amazing finding that I found 4 years ago, and as soon as I saw it in these, whatever, in some article that came out, right, when this article came out, I said immediately, I'm like, this is a proof. It's an unbelievable proof. There are crabs that are living in areas in the near the Mariana Trench in the Atlantic Ocean where there are volcanic eruptions constantly, and it's thousands upon thousands of degrees in the water around. There are these white crabs that live all around this area and are able to take the heat of thousands of degrees of temperature. It's absolutely unbelievable. They've never seen the light of day. They've never been in anywhere cold. They live in absolute heated temperatures, and they can only live in that area. They can't be taken out from there. So it makes sense. Whatever you want to call it, those are the crabs. Could there be a salamander that's like this? Yes, there definitely could be. We just haven't found it yet. We haven't found one near a volcano, and nobody here knows magic that I know of, and therefore you've never called it into your fire of 7 days and seven nights or 7 years. Says the Chasam Sofer, that's why you don't know what the salamander is. There are other salamanders and newts out there that are not made from fire, but this salamander, this specific one that makes you impervious to fire, which every fireman would love to have, this one is only called to you from the volcano through magic, and you can't get it in any other way. So this is the time. If anybody wants to go searching for something, volcanic areas, I would say by Iceland or something like that, would be the perfect place to be able to go for it. The Tzitz Eliezer has a little bit of a different issue. He says in Chelek Yud Zayin Tshuva Lamed Dalet, Rabbi Lezer Waldenberg, you should know about it, Rabbi Lezer Waldenberg lived not too long ago. He answered all these shilas and medical issues in Eretz Yisrael. Tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham in the Eidah Haredes. He says, based on a question by the Ramah Shmuel, he says there are two different types of salamanders, two different ones that exist. One of them seems to be made by magic, and the other one seems to be a little bit more natural. He says both of them are coming through flames, but one is made through magic and one is made in a more natural way. Chizkiyahu HaMelech The way that he became a regular standard, I don't want to say that, the way that he became impervious to fire is not through the magic salamander. It came from the Tahor salamander, which Chizkio's mother miraculously found right by her at that moment. And she knew, my husband is about to take my son and bring him through Moloch and destroy him. That's about to happen. So what did she do? She said, I am going to get a salamander. And that salamander appeared right in front of her. She took it, took its blood, and smeared it all over Chizkio HaMelech. And that, it could be that that flame retardant stayed on Chizkio for the rest of his life. And that he was that way for the rest of his life. And it wasn't Tameh, it was a different type of salamander than the one that we're mentioning in these psukim themselves. The Ben Yoyada says it's a remez, that the reason why salamanders are known, the difference between these two types, one that's Tameh and one that's whatever it is it stands for two different types of Talmidei Chachamim. One guy spends 7 years in a fire working on himself and constantly going over and over and over again, learning shtark to become the Talmid Chacham that he is. That's one type that the salamander represents. There's another Talmid Chacham that gets his way through magic. The only reason why he becomes a big Talmid Chacham is he tries finding shortcuts to be able to get everything that he needs and the information that he needs. It's like a guy who, I don't know if this will ever be available, but the guy who, as soon as he finds out there's a little chip that you could put into your brain that adds in all the information, like a little Bar Ilan CD you could just attach to your brain, and you're just like, I know everything now. That guy's going to go ahead and get the Bar Ilan CD. That's not the right thing to do. You're not a Talmid Chacham that way. That's not how you become a Talmid Chacham. You become a Talmid Chacham by working on yourself and making yourself into one, not by just automatically having the information. As a timeout, there's an unbelievable story that my Rosh Hashiva told me, Rabbi Lairfield, once. It was a time when I was staying by his house, and he told me that he was listening to the radio. And he said, in the radio in Eretz Yisrael, they had found a certain guy. There's a famous story, and the story goes like this. He says that there was a child that went to Gan about 30, 40 years ago. I don't know how long it was. It was a while ago. It might have been longer than that. It might have been 50 years ago, because I think the Grizz was alive at the time. But Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik. So they found this child. This child was in Gan and everything. And the Gan teacher was trying to teach them like a bracha, like a short bracha. They're all like 3, 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds, whatever it was. And she's like, Baruch Ata. And then the kid rattles off, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Olam Shekol Ni'avivaro. And she looks at this 3-year-old kid, 4-year-old kid. She's like, oh my gosh, what other brachos do you know? And he starts rattling off all the brachos. Says, what else do you know? And he started rattling off tefillas. All the tefillas. It's 3, 4-year-old kid. So when the kid's mother, the boy's mother, came to pick him up, so she said, the Gan teacher said, this is the most amazing thing. I can't believe how well you've taught your child, what your child is able to do. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen before in my life. I've never seen anything like it. She said, I never taught him anything. I don't know what you're talking about. So they tested him. They started doing tests, and they found that the kid knew Gemara's Baal Peh, Chumash Baal Peh, Rishonim Baal Peh, like Rambans, Ritvas, Rashbas. He knew Achronim Baal Peh, everything. He knew all this stuff right off the and he was just spitting it out. It was all coming from him. It was absolutely amazing. So they went, they brought the kid to the Grizz. And the Grizz said, do you want this? Do you want your child to have it? And the father said, no. I want him to work for his Torah. I don't want him to have everything automatic. He's never going to chazer. He's never going to do anything. He's not going to try very hard. I want him to work hard for his Torah. It's the Grizz, and this, Marushiva said, he knew from here that the Grizz knew Kabbalah. You wouldn't think that somebody like a Briscoe Rav would know Kabbalah. Of course he would. But regardless, oh, I have a great story about that also, about something that I just saw on last Friday night, which I'm not allowed to tell anyone, but it's okay. So either way, craziest thing I've ever seen before in my life. There is somebody in Chicago that knows Kabbalah, that I can definitely tell you. Anyway, it wasn't somebody flying. Not yet. But either way, regardless, so he said, this so we know, the Grizz told him, take the child and put him in a mikveh with 39 sa'ah in it. 39 sa'ah of water. We all know that a mikveh requires 40 sa'ah of water. Put him in a mikveh with 39 sa'ah. They dunked the child in this mikveh of 39 sa'ah. When he came out, normal kid. Everything was normal. He knew what every other kid knew, and that was that. So they found the kid. This radio station did this, whatever it is, and the guy refused to reveal himself, what his name was and everything, and he agreed to come on the program to give chizuk, but he wouldn't say who he was. They found the kid, and they had him on the radio program. They asked him, are you ready to kill your father? You had everything. So what's he doing now? He's over 30 years old, or whenever, at the time when this happened. He was over 30 years old, right, when this interview was taking place, and he was in Kolo. And he was learning all things again. He said, wouldn't you want to know everything Baal Peh? So you can go into Kolo with everything already there and you could have everything there? He said, no, I thank my father every day because now I see what I have the potential of doing. Now I see what I can be. I can be a kid, right, who knows all of these things Baal Peh. I know what I have to do and I know what I have to work on. That's what I really want to do. This idea is what the Ben Ish Chai is saying. You can do it through magic, taking shortcuts and becoming a Talmid Chacham just by getting everything easily, or you could be the 7 years, day and night, working on yourself to become a Talmid Chacham, to try to work on yourself to be that way, to be able to get through over there. That's that concept. And now, if anybody knows this Gemara, there's an unbelievable Gemara. It's mentioned in Sota Mem Zayin. It's also mentioned in Sanhedrin, I believe, in Kufay, where Gehazi was the shamish of Elisha. We all know about Elisha and Naaman. Remember, Naaman had that saras. It wasn't saras. It was really like leprosy. He had some type of leprosy, non-Jewish saras type of thing, some type of skin disease. And Elisha healed him by telling him to dunk in the Jordan River 7 times. I know we're not girls, but you guys do know this story, right? Yeah? It's a little bit in Navi. It's Malachim Aleph, toward the middle. Yeah, we're okay? Sort of? Okay, got to do Navi. So either way, Elisha told him to dunk 7 times. After he came back, Naaman was healed. He was so shocked. He ran back to Elisha and he said, what can I do? How can I pay you back for all the great... I can't believe I don't have tzaras anymore. I've done everything else. What can I do? And Elisha said, I just wanted to make a... I wanted you to have a Kiddush Hashem. Wanted you to see the greatness of God. And that was that. Naaman became a Ger Toshav from that point on. Not a Ger Tzedek. He did not convert. But he became a Ger Toshav from that point on. Gehazi ran after him. He ran after him. This is the Shamash of Elisha. He ran after him and he said, my master has decided he wants more. He wants some type of gift. And Naaman gave him tons of stuff, a tongue of gold and some clothing and whatever and everything like that. When he came back, he had taken 8 things. So Elisha looked at him and said, Gehazi, you don't think I'm with you? First of all, why Gehazi thought he was going to get around a Navi? I have no idea. That's a dumb move. Okay, that's like a rookie move. Of course, you're going back to a Navi. You're like, where were you? I don't know. Don't ask. Like, what are you doing? Either way, Gehazi comes back, and Elisha looks at him, and he says, do you realize that I was just learning the sugi of the Shmona Shrotzim, and you went and you got Shmona Begadim, Shmona gifts, 8 gifts. Because of those 8 gifts, you lost the chelek in the Shmona Shrotzim. That's what you lost. And therefore, the tzaras of Naaman gets attached to you. What's pshat? It's an unbelievable Gemara. What in the world is he talking about that the Shmona Shrotzim has Sheikhist over here? Like all of a sudden Elisha's like, oh man, you missed Shmona Shrotzim, now you get Saras. What's pshat? The answer is that Gehazi was a shortcut monger. He was a guy who always wanted a shortcut. This is my addition to the Ben Ish Chai, but I think this is what the Ben Ish Chai means. The idea is that Elisha looked at Gehazi and he said to him, what the Shmona Shrotzim stands for, the idea of the salamander is there are ways of getting it in an easy way and there are ways of getting it in a difficult way. You wanted to go the easy route. You want your Hana and Olam Hazeh and still get your Chelek and Olam Haba. That doesn't happen to everybody. That's not something for everybody to get. Because you went that way, you missed out on the lesson to be learned from Shmona Shrotzim, and therefore, not only do you lose your Chelek and Olam Haba, you also lose your Chelek and Olam Hazeh, and he gave him Tzaras for the rest of his life. It's an unbelievable Gemara. It's an unbelievable Gemara even more so because he's one of the 4 Mitzrayim that find the riches when the people leave later on when they surround Shomron. You know what I'm talking about? Right after that. It's an unbelievable thing, but that's the idea behind it. There's more, but this, I think, is over there. The last thing I'm going to mention is the Torah Shlema. Torah Shlema is Reb Menachem Kasher. Tremendous tzaddik in Talmud Chacham. You ever seen the Torah Shlemas? It's like that 13-volume set. Huge, huge sarm. He quotes every Medrash and Gemara you can possibly think of. Think of a Medrash and a Gemara, I guarantee you it's in there somewhere. It's huge, and he has notes on everything. So he quotes this whole thing about the salamandra, and he says, it's possible, since this creature is very moist and cold-blooded, it could be it has the ability to withstand fire a lot longer than any other creature. Any other creature would be burned because we're very dry, but an animal that constantly secretes a liquid on its skin, in which that's why they have to be in water so long, right? Something like that maybe has the ability to be impervious to fire. He doesn't explain that the blood can be used to, you know, make a flame retardant on top of a person, but maybe that's the idea, says the Torah Shlema. Rabbi Slifkin quotes it in his book Sacred Monsters, but there is a study that was done by a Dr. Stromberg. Now, I haven't been able to look up the whole study, I've only seen part of it, who claims that the California newt, Taricha terosa, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I assume I am, has been known to secrete from its skin a flame-retardant foam that hardens around the newt itself, protecting it from heat and other issues. So it's possible that there is a creature like this. Again, if we go with the Chasam Sofer, they're all in volcanoes somewhere, and until you have magic, you're not going to be able to take them out anyway, so it doesn't make that much of a difference. But according to this, there still could be something. On the side, you'll see, this is the California newt that's on the side, right over here, the right-hand side. There's something that they come from. Now, the claim is that, no, they just found a bunch of logs, that they burned the logs, and all the newts that were inside the log that, you know, wanted to remain moist and were in there ran out from there. So it looked like the flames started this. Grant, guys, I don't know how you can confuse a 7-year fire with a random log being burned. I don't know how that could possibly be confused and say like, oh, that's what they meant. I don't think so. There's something to this. We just don't understand it. We have absolutely no idea. I'm not going to go much further than this. I'm just going to tell you, there's an amazing Gemara in Menachos Chavtes. If you look over here, there's a Marsha in Ibn Ezra, a Griz, and a Tzlach that talk about that Gemara in Menachos Chavtes and Aleph. And there's one, it's amazing that there's no type that's of sheretz that's considered kosher. Every other animal has an ability to be kosher. Even locusts have the ability to be kosher. But shrutzim, there's nothing that's kosher. And it's because they're related to the nachash. It's an amazing idea, but that's over here as well. So if you want to read it right over here, there's a Balaturim, a Paneach Raz, a Razadamer, a Meshachach, Matura Tumim, and Orachayim HaKadosh, and Rabbeinu Bechaya that all mention these types of ideas. But all together what we went through is the ideas of what these animals were. Then afterward, we went to the concept of what this salamandra was, and we really ended with all that, trying to understand what it is, and we didn't say the Menachos Chavtes, and then the Shrutzim that apply with the snake itself. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.